VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The global response to control the spread of novel coronavirus continues, with the spotlight now being shined outside of China, where the virus originated. VOA's Lattice Ahok.
The virus has spread around the world and has now reached the U.S. capital, Washington, and the surrounding area. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has declared a state of emergency. On Sunday, he announced measures to protect residents, including testing as many people as possible, but he ruled out large-scale quarantines.
What we have seen in China, what we're seeing in Italy, you'd have to do massive quarantine, which would be very disruptive to society and the economy.
The Italian government on Sunday imposed travel restrictions on some 16 million people in the north, including major cities there, such as Milan and Padua, as part of a fight against the deadly virus. People can travel in and out of these areas only with a special permission. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
Afghanistan's president-elect Ashraf Ghani and his election rival runner-up Abdullah Abdullah are preparing for parallel swearing-in ceremonies Monday, fueling political tensions and posing a fresh challenge to U.S.-led peace efforts. The Afghan Election Commission late last month declared incumbent Ghani the winner of the bitterly contested September 20th presidential election. But Abdullah, the incumbent chief executive, rejected the outcome as fraudulent, claiming that he and his team had won the vote and threatened to form his own government. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said Sunday that he will meet with European Union officials in Brussels to discuss an influx of migrants in Turkey. As migrants from Syria continue to cross there, Erdogan has said that Ankara can no longer abide by the 2016 law that prevents migrants in Turkey from traveling into the European Union. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. North Korea has fired three unidentified projectiles into the sea just a week after test firing two short-range ballistic missiles. VOA's Marissa Melton.
North Korea fired three unknown projectiles Monday, according to South Korea's military. It was the second apparent North Korean missile test of the year. The projectiles were fired toward the sea off North Korea's east coast from the eastern town of Sunduk. That's according to South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff. North Korea has sent mixed messages over the past week. Last Monday, North Korea test-fired two short-range ballistic missiles. On Thursday, Kim Jong-un sent a warm letter expressing what South Korea said was his unwavering friendship and trust towards South Korean President Moon Jae-in. It was the two leaders' first contact in months. In a New Year's speech, Kim said he no longer felt bound by his self-imposed suspension of long-range missile and nuclear tests. He also warned the world would soon witness what he called a new strategic weapon. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Former Vice President Joe Biden and U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders have each picked up significant endorsements for the presidential bids this weekend. AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
I have decided that I am with great enthusiasm going to endorse Joe Biden.
Senator Kamala Harris joins a cluster of one-time rivals for the nomination, posting a video statement Sunday.
We need a leader who really does care about the people and who can therefore unify the people. And I believe Joe can do that.
I stand with Bernie Sanders today.
But at a rally in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Bernie Sanders picked up his own endorsement from the Reverend Jesse Jackson.
He's never lost his taste for justice for the people.
And Sanders tells ABC's This Week he's not surprised to see the Democratic establishment rallying around Biden.
But we are winning the support of grassroots America because we have an agenda that speaks to working people.
I'm Ben Thomas.
Monday marks the day British royal couple Meghan and Harry depart from royal duties as they mark out their new life in Canada. Away from the media spotlight, AP correspondent Karen Shamas.
The couple's relationship with the media had been turbulent from the start. On their wedding day, the British press featured stories about a rift between Meghan and her father. Harry publicly defended his wife and directed his anger at the intrusive media he has resented all his life. "I will not be bullied into playing a game that killed my mum," he told ITV News last fall. Royals expert Pauline McLaren believes there was a mismatch between strong-minded Meghan and the royal family.
Because royal women are expected to be, you know, clothes horses. They're also expected to, you know, smile a lot, but not really express any strong opinions.
Karen Shamas, London.
More at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatia in Washington. Today is Monday, March the 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi police Sunday arrested two senior members of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition in an apparent crackdown.
It's an issue that has been received as one of those political connected arrests, mindful of the fact that the arrests have just come an hour after the president had made those remarks here in Lilongwe.
Makumbo Mutale is a Malawi governor's commentator. Uganda police denied targeted arrest against Bobi Wine's People Power Movement. A Cameroon separatist spokesperson denies responsibility for Sunday's attack on a village in a French-speaking region of the country. And a former Liberian president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, launches a center to groom African women in leadership.
This center will be a catalyst to get them to be more committed, more energized in taking and promoting leadership, intentional leadership.
Cameroon women march on Sunday on International Women's Day to demand their rights, and we'll have a report on domestic violence in Kenya. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi police on Sunday arrested two senior members of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition in an apparent crackdown. Police arrested Gift Trapens, the group's vice president, along with the executive member, McDonald Sembereka. The group had announced to hold a protest at State House on March the 25th. The arrest came soon after President Peter Mutharika spoke at a rally in Blantyre, threatening to deal with the group if they went ahead with their protest to make what he called Malawi ungovernable. Police were Sunday said to be looking for the group's chairperson, Timothy Ntambo. Malawi Governor's commentator Makumbo Mutale says the arrests are politically motivated.
These civil society leaders had actually organized a demonstration that they wanted to march to the State House on 25th March. What they had indicated to say is that if the president does not assent the bills which parliament has passed, when it's necessary that we have the election, then they'll proceed with the march and they're going to shut down the State House. So the president was actually in the rally, and several speakers who spoke at this political rally, they actually took tough against Mr. Ntambo, the chairperson of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, Mr. Trumpist, Mr. Biremai, and McDonald Sembereka, that he's going to order the police and the army actually to use force when they're going to have their demonstrations. So it's an issue that has been received as one of those political connected arrests, mindful of the fact that the arrest has just come an hour after the president had made those remarks here in Lilongwe.
We tried to reach Mr. Ntambo, president of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition. For some reason, we could not reach him. What do you know about him?
Mr. Ntambo, basically, as we know currently, the police actually, they have a warrant of arrest that they want to effect, and is one of them. But what we know as of now is that they are yet to arrest him. So definitely, maybe he might be in hiding, because as you're aware, these arrests are happening at night, and that there have been all these political speeches that have accompanied these arrests. So there's a lot of suspicion in terms of danger by many Malawians to say Mr. Sembereka and Mr. Trump that have been arrested, as they've been transferred to Blantyre, in another city. Will there not be harm that will happen to them?
As you mentioned, the Human Rights Defenders Coalition was planning to hold a rally on March 25th, but these arrests are also coming ahead this week. I think the Supreme Court is supposed to rule on the challenge made by President Mutharika on the Constitutional Court's decision. Is that correct?
Exactly. So on Wednesday, the Supreme Court will be sitting actually to hear the appeal that President Mutharika made, and as well as the Malawi Electoral Commission, against the ruling of the Constitutional Court. Because I think President Mutharika has made it very clear that he was not happy with the ruling by the Constitutional Court, and I think he has been really coming very hard against the Constitutional Court. So maybe these are one of those tactics that the president and the current regime might be taking in order to put fear in the activists, especially as they are now also preparing for the demonstrations.
Has there been any particular charges announced against, say, Mr. Trapens and the others?
So far, no charge has been actually announced about the arrest of Sembereka and Mr. Trumpes, and this is what is really making people to raise a lot of questions. But then I think I have also make it clear that it's not the first time the two have been arrested. During the time when they were also organizing demonstrations, after they had organized some demonstrations, they were also arrested. But then it was linked to an issue that had to do with the issue around how they had misappropriated some donor funds, I think related to HIV/AIDS. And at that particular time, then they were given bail. So it was one of those charges that government used to say they've been implicated in the misappropriation of the funds, but they used as a way of silencing them because of their stance in actually leading the demonstration.
Makumbo Mutale is a Malawi governance commentator. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Uganda's opposition pressure group, the People Power Movement, says at least 50 of its supporters have been arrested and detained by police in recent weeks. Joel Senyonyi, the spokesperson of the group, says some of those arrested have been denied access to their lawyers, but the police denies targeting the People Power Movement supporters. Mugumi Davis Rakarinchi reports from Kampala.
Senyonyi, People Power spokesperson, says many of their supporters were arrested in the last 2 weeks. He claims some of the arrested supporters have been tortured and were denied access to legal representation.
Yeah, we had about 22 who were arrested in the east, taken to a place called Nalufenya, a notorious place for torture. Other people were arrested from within several parts of the country. We have been pushing. Some have been released this particular week. Others are still in detention. Some we know where they are. Of course, they're being denied access to their lawyers. Others, we don't even know where they are.
The People Power Movement is a political pressure group led by popular parliamentarian and artist Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine. Kyagulanyi was cleared by the Electoral Commission to go ahead and make countrywide consultations on his mission to contest for the presidency of Uganda. The elections are expected sometime next year, but many times Chagulanyi's attempts to make consultations have been interrupted by the police, saying he does not follow the necessary procedures.
It's difficult times, but we're a lot more resolute than ever before. Even these comrades that are detained and so on, they're strong, and they know that now more than ever, they must keep at this fight to see that we see transition.
Senyonyi accuses the police of being used by the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, whose leader, President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, has been in power for more than 30 years. Uganda police spokesperson Fred Enanga denies the police were arresting people based on their political affiliation.
We are colorblind. We don't go by color because this one is yellow, red, blue. No, we categorically evaluate the evidence and where we find people have been conflict of crime and the offenses are arrestable and punishable, then we go ahead and arrest these people, but not based on color.
Enanga is tasking the People Power to produce a list of their supporters that they claim to have been arrested. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
A spokesperson for Cameroon's Ambazonia separatist movement is denying responsibility for Sunday's reported attack on a village in the French-speaking region of the country. The Associated Press reports that the separatists attacked a security post in the village of Galim, killing at least 7 people. But Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonian Republic, says Ambazonian fighters only deny they defend their territory and do not launch cross-border attacks.
There is a French-Cameroon movement that is created out of Paris that has taken responsibility of that attack. Ambazonians have no reason crossing our boundaries, going over to La République du Cameroun to wage a war. We are defending our territory and nothing more.
Are you saying, Chris, that there is another group of separatists from the French-speaking Cameroon side?
I don't know what you refer to as separatists. Ambazonians, we do not consider ourselves separatists. We are restorationists. The other group that has taken responsibility of this act consider themselves a nationalist movement of Cameroon. The group was created in Paris. They are called Brigade Anti-Sardinade. It's a French-Cameroon nationalist movement created out of Paris and based all over the diaspora.
But aren't they part of your movement?
They are not part of our movement. They don't believe in the independence for the Southern Cameroon. We have nothing in common.
If it is true they carry out these attacks, is this something that you welcome?
We do not appreciate the killing, the shedding of innocent blood. And so, of course, we do not condone it. We do not support it. However, we think that if the regime in French Cameroon were to settle the problems in its house, they would not have this situation where they have their own citizens attacking their own institutions and leading to the shedding of blood.
What is the way out of here? Some of the political people have spoken about maybe they need a federation to solve this problem instead of through the barrel of the gun.
That is a wrong prescription, James. Our people have not been killed, our children slaughtered and buried in mass graves, our villages and towns decimated with fire for us to get to a federation that we asked for from the beginning of this struggle. That was the demand in 2016. They refused it and they called us names, two cubes of sugar, Biafra, Anglo fools, and so on and so on. This has now dragged on for going to 4 years, and we have had over 12,000 of our people killed, close to 1 million living in the displaced settlements, and over 100,000 as refugees. Why should we settle for anything less than a free and independent Southern Cameroon? No, we are looking for nothing. Nothing but a free, independent Ambazonia.
Chris Anius, the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonian Separatist Movement of Cameroon, who is speaking with us from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Today is Monday, March 9th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. Women across the world celebrated International Women's Day yesterday, Sunday. Ahead of the day, former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf gathered women leaders from across the world in Monrovia to launch a special initiative that she said will groom women leadership across Africa. Sirleaf, Africa's first elected woman president, launched the Ellen Johnson Sirleaf Presidential Center for Women and Development. She explains the purpose of the center to reporter Moses Gaziewu.
Its objectives are to bring women leaders together, to share experiences, to be able to raise their profiles, to come together in perfecting their strategies, their plans, to recognize what leadership means, the responsibilities and the rewards from leadership. And in this, we hope to create a wave of women who, as a result of their commitment and accomplishment in leadership, will move to even higher levels, will be able to have more influence in the exercise of their leadership.
Madam President, what have you seen? Is it that since you left political office 2 years ago, things aren't going too well with women exerting themselves? That's why you're launching an initiative as such?
First of all, I don't think it's really totally true that women have not been exerting themselves. Very true that in terms of the progress of women, in one or two places, there have been some decline in achieving the goals that have been set. I also pointed out that a part of this may be affected by the fact that democracy itself is under threat, and women tend to thrive and do better in democracies. But what this is, this center will be a catalyst to get them to be more committed, more energized, more active in taking and promoting leadership, intentional leadership, unabashedly. So they're going for leadership, they're going to claim it in every way they can and help other women to also exercise the same amount of claim in all areas of public service in every country.
That was former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf speaking with reporter Moses Gaziewu in Monrovia. 40% of married women in Kenya have reported being victims of either domestic violence or sexual abuse. The Wikimedia Foundation says low level of education, religion, and socioeconomic status were the main causes of domestic violence in Kenya. And as the world celebrated International Women's Day yesterday, Sunday, Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi on a Kenyan woman who is a survivor of domestic violence and also a pioneer of non-governmental organization that helps women who survive domestic violence.
The statistics seem to be increasing day by day as the rate of murder cases, especially among married couples, are on the rise in Kenya. On Friday, 19th April 2013, Diana Kamande, a mother of two and a survivor of domestic violence, becomes a widow. This was after a 10-year love story turned sorrowful. The late husband came home, cut her with a machete, threatens to kill the kids, and finally kills himself after the kids and Diana are rescued.
I'm in disbelief. My husband can do this to me. By the time I come to realize I need to hide, he had cut me for 21 times on my head. Yeah, he was cutting me. You know, I'm seated, I'm asking him questions, and he's cutting me. It's when now the reality dawns on to me. When I'm full of blood, my nightdress is full of blood. The bedroom is a pool of blood. I decide to hide under the bed. Pretend I'm dead. Keep quiet. Stop screaming.
As if cutting her was not enough, Diana's late husband calls his parents and in-laws to inform them about the incident, reminding them that they should buy a coffin and prepare for burial arrangements. Diana says at this time she's over bleeding and still running to save the children who are screaming for help.
He tells my dad, I've killed your daughter and I'm going to kill your grandchildren and kill myself.
Diana is rescued and taken to hospital. The nerves are damaged in her head. She goes for surgery. Immediately she leaves the theater room. A police officer in waiting for her to write a statement because the husband had killed himself. Diana now has a case to answer. She's charged of murder she never committed.
On our way out, my husband tells me, go die in the hospital, I'm going to die here. So I was taken to theater after almost 7 hours. Thank God I came out. Then the first phone call is he killed himself. The next person I meet coming from theater, find a police officer. You expected to write a statement of what transpired.
After 2 months of recuperating in hospital, she's discharged. Before she heals of the scars and psychological torture, she is handed a charge sheet. At this time, she has a murder case to answer. The employer releases her from work. She becomes desperate. The future is dimmed. But while in court, Diana wins the case. The desperate situation gives Diana the zeal to look for other women who face domestic violence, as well as widows in the society. Through her initiative of the non-governmental organization, the government supports the women. She grew the number from 15 to 1.4 million nationwide.
I decided to register an NGO, and now the women could organize them into a manageable number of 20s. Other widows seeing this, and even other vulnerable women who had gone through violence, when they saw this, they started now calling. Government now became a partner.
And
that was Maureen Ojiambo reporting from Nairobi, Kenya. On the occasion of International Women's Day yesterday, more than 20,000 Cameroon women from rural and urban areas assembled in the capital, Yaoundé, to press for their rights to education and decision-making while urging a stop to early marriages and harmful traditional practices. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
All across the nations, all around the world,
a group of women at the central market in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, sing that they, like their peers all over Africa, are longing to be freed from the bondage of strong traditional practices that impede their emancipation and well-being. Among them is female activist Emanuela Mokake of the NGO Cameroon Women for Participation in Development. Mokake says her NGO is working to change the perception that women should only bring up babies, carry out domestic chores, and work in farms.
Women have realized that they are no more compelled to endure domestic violence because it hampers on their human rights. Women are setting out now to say, no, enough of this battery. If any man beats a woman, the law under assault and battery clearly handles that.
Mokake said they were asking Cameroon to ratify the Maputo Protocol on the Rights of Women in Africa, which it signed in 2006, and respect the UN Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. The tens of thousands of women gathered Sunday in Yaoundé said they were unhappy that strong traditional practices still encourage female genital mutilation and early marriages. Marie-Thérèse Abena-Ondua, Cameroon Minister of Women's Empowerment and the Family, says in spite of the challenges, much has been done to respect the issue, as there are 58 women in the 180-member lower house of parliament and 36 women are mayors in the country that has over 380 councils.
Really, if women have to move forward, they need the support of men. Women are capable, and women have also dared, because many of them were not even brave enough to postulate. The environment is not friendly. Tradition has to change. We keep good tradition, but we should give up the bad traditions.
Ondua said the government was taking all necessary measures to improve access to education for women and girls, with a particular focus on rural areas, and by carrying out public awareness-raising campaigns. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the CAF Champions League, where all the four semi-finalists have emerged in the 2019-2020 CAF Champions League after the second leg quarterfinal matches were concluded this past weekend. Raja Casablanca reached the semi-finals after a 15-year absence, despite losing 1-0 away to TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo, as they won the first leg 2-0 at home. Wydad scraped through 2-1 on aggregate, despite losing 1-0 at Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia. On Friday, Zamalek of Egypt knocked out defending champions Esperance of Tunisia, falling 1-0 in Tunis to an early penalty, but going through 3-2 on aggregate. Al Ahly of Egypt avenged a humiliating loss to Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa last season by drawing 1-1 in Pretoria on Saturday to qualify for the semi-finals, 3-1 on aggregate. The two-leg semi-finals during May will pit Cairo and Casablanca clubs against each other, with Raja facing Zamalek and Wydad Casablanca tackling Al Ahly of Egypt. In the CAF Confederations Cup, Nigerian heavyweight Enyimba bowed out of the competition after they were beaten 2-0 away to Guinean club Horia AC in Conakry to secure a 3-1 aggregate triumph. Debutant Pyramid FC reached the semi-finals of the Confederations Cup after beating Zambians Zanaco 3-1 on aggregate on Sunday. In the other matches played, Hassania Agadir defeated El Nasri of Libya 2-0 thanks to a penalty from Karim El Bakoui and a last-grab goal from Rede Atasi to advance as comprehensive 7-0 aggregate winners. On a rather sad note, a football player in the Nigerian Professional Football League who plays for Nasra United, Chineme Martins, died on Sunday after slumping in their Nigerian Professional Football League tie against Northern Bay side Katsina United. An eyewitness who was at the stadium said the late defender was standing alone when he slumped around the 45th minute. His team had been awarded a free kick and he was standing alone in their own half when he suddenly collapsed. Other players informed the referee and he was eventually rushed to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. In other news, Nigerian-born mixed martial art athlete Israel Adesanya defended his middleweight title with a unanimous decision win over Olympic wrestling medalist Yoel Romero at UFC 248 in Las Vegas on Sunday. In a cagey tactical contest that lacked the excitement many fans anticipated, Nigerian-born New Zealander Adesanya peppered the 42-year-old Cuban with powerful leg kicks to take victory on the scorecards. The bout started almost at a complete standstill, with Romero static in the middle of the octagon holding a high guard. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, March 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion.
Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.